Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome to Earth.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Bong. James Bong.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Your move, creep.
Get off my plane.
Get your ass to Mars.
I feel mean. The name's Earth.
I'm your huckleberry.
We see we cut the Kit Kat and haul.
Hey, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the podcast for April 12th, 2021. I'm your host, Zach, and joining us this week we have Chris.
Hello.
And we got a ton of stuff to talk about this week, so let's dive right in. But unfortunately, we got to kick things off with some sad news. So when we started recording last week, we were kind of like, it was kind of like the false news that this came out, but then it unfortunately was confirmed later on. But DMX passed away last week.
Mm.
Heart attack, possibly a drug overdose. They've officially said that, but that seems like what the prevailing theory is.
Yeah. It's like he was 50, so he's like a little too young for a heart attack. But DMX had he liked to party a bit, he liked to rough ride a bit. So you know, live hard. I don't know, but. I mean, just surprising, you know?
Yeah.
No one thought this would happen.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously one of the biggest rappers of all time. Like tons of platinum albums, like tons of, like, just massive, massive hits. I mean, X Gonna Give It To You and Party Up In Here, Rough Riders Anthem, and all those songs have just appeared in, like, tons and tons and tons of stuff. Movies and TV shows and games and everything, so...
It was, like, in 2000, like, late, super late 90s, early 2000s, like, DMX songs were just in everything, right? And then it kind of, like, takes a break, and then there's, like, renaissance where, like, hey, I remember DMX, like, yeah, that was 3 years ago, he's back, or it's, like, we'll feature, you know, Up In Here, or we'll have, like, some reference to him, and it just comes back again, and it's, like... He never went away, which is good. Like for his career, like DMX knew how to keep up his career stuff like relevant or just like license it correctly. Like I guess that's the key word. He knew how to like license it. But his like personal life where like he does this crazy stuff on the side, super weird. How's that like? And then it's like if there's gonna be a DMX movie, like I wanna see that era of just DMX like trying to break into an airport. Like claiming that he was an FBI agent.
Oh man!
All the stuff that's like not even typical to like a musician that's going crazy. Like you know, like MC Hammer. Like he just went bankrupt, but he didn't have that kind of craziness.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, DMX is just like, yeah, I'm like a famous rapper. I'm also an FBI agent, and like I need to get to this airfield. And people are just like, you are DMX, and you're going to jail. And yeah, it's just like he kept people's on his mind and. Not too many rappers have, like, three initials that are just, like, I don't know what DMX stands for. It's just, like, I just know him as DMX.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, yeah, obviously his music was in a ton of stuff, but then he was also in a bunch of stuff, especially, like, we were talking, like, the early, yeah, like, you just mentioned, like, the early 2000s, he was very pivotal to the rapper martial arts movement of the early 2000s, like...
He kind of picked up where, like, Wu-Tang Clan started.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he co-starred with Jet Li twice, or
he was in two Jet Li movies, I would say, because his cameo in Romeo Must Die, like it was cool, but it's like his just character just was in it for the weekend.
Yeah, again, Cradle to the Grave was more of a co-star in DMX and Jet Li.
Yes, that was definitely like a bigger role, and you get to watch him like be DMX. Like, that is more his role, where he's like, I'm a father, and then I'm also, like, a bank thief, and I'm also, like, a really good fighter, and just like, okay.
And Cradle of the Grave is where X Gonna Give It To You came from, so that's from the soundtrack of that movie. So,
really?
Yeah.
Huh. DMX star with Steven Seagal, too?
Yes, Exit Wounds.
Exit Wounds. That's the one I'm also thinking of. I always think, like, Cradle to the Grave and Exit Wounds are, like, related, but it's like, no, they're, they are, like, in different universes. I think that would have been cool if they were related, but, you know, like, sequel movies.
Or, like, Half-Past Dead.
Yeah. Half-Past Dead was a weird one.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people were like kind of like confused Exit Wounds and Half-Past Dead, because Half-Past Dead was Ja Rule, who is, like, I think DMX accused him of stealing his, like, the delivery and, like, his, like, voice performance. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's you got basically they like feuded, but it was like, I don't know if they actually were feuding or just kind of publicity feuding.
Yeah. Oh, also, Death Champ Vendetta, he was in that game. You could fight as DMX or fight against DMX. I don't think, like, it doesn't look like he was in the sequels. Like, was he in Fight for New York?
Maybe. I feel like he was, but...
Because, like, on his IMDb, like, it doesn't list Fight for New York or the third one.
He's just in Vendetta, that's it?
He's just in Vendetta, yeah.
Yes, like, well, I think the licensing for Def Jam, like, it was where whoever was over Def Jam's records, so
yeah,
maybe he was out of that point.
But yeah, a bunch of memorable movie roles. Definitely music. Like, X is gonna give it to you and Party Up in Here and Rough Riders Anthem are going to be in movies forever, probably. So,
like, yeah, now it's gonna be more honorable DMX songs, more than a kind of like a fun throwback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also thinking this kind of goes against that, like, acapella version of X Gonna Give It To You I heard, like, last year.
Oh, God.
That I was like, what the was hell? That made me mad.
What was that from?
Some X game. I forgot. I gotta find it, but yeah, man, I heard that and I was like, what? Like, did DMX sell that license? What's happening?
Yeah, how do they sell these, like, the slowed down acapella, like, acoustic versions of these songs? I guess, I figure out how, like, cover songs work, because I guess that'd be technically a cover song, so maybe they don't have to, like,
pay
as much, or...
But it's like a weird Glee, like, dubstep version that I was like, just like, I'm not the biggest DMX fan, but I was like, this is gonna sound weird. Like, why are they doing this?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so RIP DMX. Go listen to some X Gonna Give It To You, or go watch Exit Wounds or Cradle to the Grave or something.
Which I totally forgot, but I mean, I looked it up right now. DMX stands for Darkman X.
Yeah.
Totally don't get it, but all right.
His albums also had, like he was, like, they're, like, very, like, I don't know, like, horror, hell race. They kind of, like, his albums were, like, Flesh in My Flesh and, like, all these, like,
biblical all, like, names.
Yeah, definitely, like, interesting names for his albums. So moving on to other stuff. We got a bunch of shows to dive into. And we'll kick things off with the return of F9, Fast and Furious. I believe it was, like, probably the last huge thing before everything shut down was, like, Fast 9, or F9 had its, like, giant, like, Miami Beach party for the trailer. And then, like, the week after, it was just like, and everything's done. Like, do you remember that, Chris? Like, it was, like,
March. The one Pitbull was, like, hosting.
Yeah,
and
Pitbull was there. Yeah. It was, like, it was, like, March of last year, right?
Yeah, it was something where, like, Corona didn't take hold of things because it was very select areas, but I don't know, Florida was just like, yeah, come on down, everyone get ready, it's gonna be hype. And like, it was like pre-release footage they were teasing, and then they were saying, like, you get to meet celebrities.
Yeah.
And I think Corona itself was, like, sponsoring the party.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, and then obviously, like, shortly after, like, everything shut down for a year or more here as we're rolling into year two. But the F9's back. They they were actually one of the first, like, after that beach party, they were basically just like, well, we'll see you next year. Like, we're done. Like, they were the first big movie to be like, well, we're pushing this back a whole year. We're not doing, like, a couple months or weeks or, like, this is a whole year wait for this. But, yeah, F9 is finally apparently coming out in June 25th this year. And we got a brand new trailer, giant trailer, over 3 minutes long, possibly showing too much. Who knows?
It feels like a lot. I feel like I've seen half that movie already.
Yeah, definitely a lot of stuff in this trailer. So I feel like if you want to go in like less spoiled, I would say don't watch this trailer. But
it's a lot.
Yeah, but yeah, we got it's I guess it's undetermined time after Fate of the Furious. I would say maybe like a couple years after Fate of the Furious seems like because little Brian is like two or three. It looks like. Possibly.
I think he's older. I think he's like
four or five. Yeah. It looks four. Like probably 3 or 4 years after Fate of the Furious. Everyone's just kind of like they're rebuilding the house. They're like they have a country house. Like everyone's just like is like living these like peaceful domestic lives. But then Cypher's back. Charlize Theron, and she's brought Jacob Toretto, Dom's evil younger brother, played by John Cena. We have never heard of.
Yeah. Never mentioned about. Yes, no yeah. idea. It's like, do they have to be related? But I guess they did.
Yeah, so Jacob is here looking for revenge, and he's like attacking the family, so the family's got to go back into action. And it's also the unexpected return of Han, who is not dead. I cannot wait for the explanation of why he's not dead. Because we saw him get shot point blank by fucking Jason Statham. So it's
did
like,
he get shot? I thought his car blew up.
I thought, I guess Statham was just like standing there like watching or something maybe.
Yeah, he watched him. I think he threw a lighter or something.
He walked away from the explosion and then was like, I'm coming for you, Dom Toretto.
Yeah.
So maybe.
No,
yeah,
he
maybe,
also threw like a necklace.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
And then, so, did they bury Han?
Yes. There was. I don't know. Maybe they just buried ashes, or it's
they
like
buried another Asian dude in Japan. They're like, yeah, this looks close enough.
Yeah, I cannot wait to hear how they explain that.
I remember we had a theory last time we talked about this in depth. Where like, no, it's time travel. Like in the movie, they said, "Fuck it, this is all sci-fi now." They drive so fast. They did a flashpoint, a flash paradox.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering if it was like the company from Hobbs and Shaw that built Idris Elba. They rebuilt Han like as a cyborg now.
That'd be a cool idea. I mean, yeah, I totally got that. Like, that's related where they're cyborg people, and that some people can survive headshots in this universe.
Yep.
So that'd be cool at the end. It's spoiler. Han's actually like the working for that network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever, like the chairman or whatever that was in Hobbs and Shaw, like the evil like voice on the that was like
on the phone
controlling it yourself. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, everyone else is back. The family's back. Lucas Black is back in some like from Tokyo Drift. Like we haven't seen him since Tokyo Drift. I don't think he's gonna have a big role, but he's there. Justin Lin is back to direct. He hasn't been back since six. He directed six, and then took off 7 and 8. But he's back to finish off the franchise. He's directing. Justin Lin is gonna direct 9, 10, and 11. So and 11 is gonna be the final
movie. Announced all of that.
Yep. And I mean, just absolutely insane, over the top action as you expect from this franchise now. Like. Although I was shocked that they're like ripping off Six Underground, like with the magnet thing. Did you see that, Chris?
Yeah, with like the bomb.
Well, like Six Underground, like the Michael Bay.
Oh no, I didn't see that movie. I just thought you meant like the bomb that they had that's magnetic.
Well, yeah, in Six Underground, like they come up, they basically turn it like a like Ryan Reynolds is one of his things is like he's like a tech genius, so he turns like a ship into a magnet, and then this whole action sequence where like they're turning the magnet on and off, and that's they basically just ripped that completely off for this movie now for F9. Like There's a whole thing where like Dom has like or was it Michelle Rodriguez's car? One of the, they have a car that has a magnet inside of it, and it's like blasting things off and like pulling them to it and like repelling them off and stuff. So that's kind of weird. And then possibly the long anticipated like going to space thing, because Tyrese and Ludacris are into like a rocket car at the end of the trailer.
That's what I was saying. Like I remember seeing that last trailer, and I was like, they are going back in time. They are going so fast. They break the sound barrier.
They're sending Tyrese and Ludacris back in time
to get Han. They're pulling the time heist.
Yeah. I would not be surprised. Literally anything can happen in Fast 9 now, or the Fast and Furious franchise now, and it would be like, all right.
Yeah. Well, okay. Dumb plot, but hear me out. So things go bad halfway through this movie. Mm-hmm. They need like help, so they go get Han.
Jake kills everyone, but then they have time.
he snaps basically everyone in the crew. Yeah. And then Ludacris and Tyrese are left, so they go back in time. They recruit Han, and then they try it again. And this time they get further, but it doesn't quite work. But then they realize what they need to do really is to fix the relationship between Dom and John Cena. Yeah. So they go back even further, and they have like a young CGI John Cena and Vin Diesel, and they're like, oh, you know, this is our last job together. And they're like, no, don't. You guys should be hanging out together. And then it's like when you're right, like strangers we never met. Then they fade out, like the future versions of everyone fades out, and then it's just like the reboot Fast and the Furious franchise starting way earlier, kind of like what they did in like Days of Future Past, where it's like they existed now. Fast and Furious existed like in the 80s instead of the 90s.
Oh my god!
And it'd be so goddamn stupid, but
yep.
I could see it. Like if you wanted to reboot the franchise. Go back to make it simple where they're heisting like things, you know, that aren't like smartphone capable, and like, you know, you don't have to like write why like you can't steal like a new car, like all the car, because if you think about this, the future of cars, like they're getting more electric and hybrid. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of like bottlenecking how many like street legal race cars that are gonna be like NOS like powered and mm-hmm. and kind of like, you know, souped up by like, you know, chemicals. So you have to go back in time and just redo the franchise as if it's like just from that standpoint, like a young teen Dom and John Cena. And then you fix the timeline that the original Fast and Furious kind of like confused between Tokyo Drift. Mm-hmm. And then you could recast Brian. You could have like another guy that's like a young Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious kids.
Isn't it like the Netflix show? Like
So it's like
spy cars or whatever, or spy chasers or whatever it's called. Like,
oh my god, it's like a joke, but it's a thing, you know. So if that could be a thing. Why can't time travel, like Fast and Furious, be a thing?
Yeah, I guess we'll find out in June. I guess when this movie comes out. So get ready for that. I'm sure we'll be talking about it after it comes out. Also in June, and also featuring someone who's been in the Fast and Furious franchise, we're getting the Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife, which is a sequel to the Hitman's Bodyguard. Which did you see that, Chris? Like the Hitman's Bodyguard?
I definitely did.
So a surprise hit back in 2017. It made $183 million worldwide. It was like dominated like the like end of summer in 2017, like August into September. It was like the number one movie for like weeks on end. And everyone's back. Ryan Reynolds is back, Samuel Jackson, and Selma Hayek. And Selma Hayek is actually the one who pulls Ryan Reynolds back into action because he's on like sabbatical on vacation because he's like having nightmares of Samuel Jackson apparently because of the first movie. So now he's like trying to like relax him, go on vacation. But then Selma Hayek, who is Samuel Jackson's wife, pulls him back in because there's like a new crazy global villain causing issues, and they have to go rescue Samuel Jackson. And I guess the bad guy is Antonio Banderas this time.
Which is great because it's kind of like this reunite between Samuel Hayek and Antonio Banderas.
Yeah. And it looks like all the same kind of hijinks as the first movie, like a lot of like cursing and over-the-top violence and explosions, and I hope the first one was really fun, but I don't know if this, like, how much more you can put into this, like, how much more into the premise before it just, like, gets stretched too thin. Like, hopefully it doesn't get stretched too thin, but, like, I definitely feel like there's, like, a chance of that happening this time. It's like, alright, we get it, like...
Brian Reynolds doesn't want to do this, or, you know, basically, the whole, like, Ryan Reynolds is stressed about his latest assignment.
Yeah.
I wonder if his girlfriend, or yeah, I guess his Ryan Reynolds character's girlfriend is supposed to be in it, or not. I don't know.
I think so, no.
So they broke up?
Maybe, yeah.
That sucks.
He's apparently winning like Bodyguard of the Year award, which apparently is a thing.
That's a real thing?
I don't know. In this movie universe it is, I guess.
I thought that was a hallucination.
But... maybe. It looks like all the stuff for the first movie's back, so hopefully it'll be just as fun. Hopefully it doesn't wear out the premise. Right. Patrick Hughes is back to direct. He directed the first one. Morgan Freeman's also here. In some capacity. Frank Grillo's gonna be in it. Richard D. Grant. So, and that's gonna be June 16th in theaters. So. Definitely, if you like the first one, you'll probably like the second, looks like. So that's coming up in the summer here. And then we got the first full trailer for Army of the Dead, which is the next big Zack Snyder movie. It's the year of Zack Snyder, apparently, for 2021.
Release the Snyder Cut of everything.
Yeah. I think he said Army of the Dead is the Snyder Cut. Like, he said this is his version of this movie. So Netflix let him do whatever he wanted on this one. Yeah, it's coming to Netflix in May, and this is his kind of zombie heist movie. Dave Bautista is kind of an ex-soldier who is kind of recruited into going into Las Vegas, which has been quarantined because there's been a zombie outbreak, and it's like, but they contained it to Las Vegas, but the whole city's going to get nuked in like 32 hours. But he is approached by this casino boss, who's played by Hiroyuki Sanada, who says, like, oh, if you can get into Las Vegas and into this vault, there's $200 million in there. You can, like, walk out with it before they nuke the city. And so David, he's still, like, he just recruits, like, a whole, like, ragtag team of mercenaries and experts to go in into the zombie Las Vegas and rob this casino. But I think the interesting thing that we didn't see in the first trailer is that these zombies are, like, intelligent. They're super zombies.
Yeah, yeah. They're not mindless completely.
Yeah. Like, they have, like, some sort of, like, hierarchy. They can, like, strategize. And they're, like, they can fight. Like, they have, like, choreography. And they're very, like, dangerous fighters. They're not just, like, mindless hordes.
My concern about my, like, thing is, like, not only is there a hierarchy, but it's, like, there's, like, medieval... like armor or whatever they're wearing. Like, one of them looks like a warrior from an apocalypse. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, well, I think a lot
like
of
the king,
like,
king zombie.
Yeah, I mean it's Las Vegas. I'm sure there's like a lot of like costume people around that got turned into zombies. But
I get that.
Yeah, I guess that's the premise because there's zombie Elvis. So it's also like I guess there's like zombie like whatever. Isn't there like a medieval casino like? The like
no.
Caesar Palace or something.
No,
like...
no, that's Caesar. That's Roman. And even then, it's like the guards aren't there. But who knows? Like in this version of the world. But that part kind of like was a nice twist because I thought it'd be a straight up like zombie movie, you know, Day of the Dead, the Dawn of the Dead style. But no, they became like almost like possessed people zombies.
Yeah, they're more like they don't even seem. They seem more like vampires or something. They seem like the I don't know, like I Am Legend or something, or like the 30 Days a Night or something. Like,
so interesting concept. That makes the whole why they have to be armored and stuff like fair. So it's not just like them mowing down zombies. Like it's these people are actually like a big threat in not only like in swarms but. Like one-on-one. I also feel like half that crew is going to be like almost like Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't think all, the entire crew is gonna like make it through this thing. It's gonna come down to, like Batista and like two or three other people. And even Batista, I think like he might like I feel like there's a chance he could like sacrifice himself so the rest of them get away or something of like get out of here with like get out of here with the money or like get out of here. Like, I save people now. I could die. But yeah, so that's gonna be May 21st on Netflix and in select theaters too. But it's mostly gonna be Netflix, so check that out when it comes out. And speaking of zombies, actually breaking right before we started recording this, we got our first look at also on Netflix, Resident Evil Infinite Darkness, which is the new CG Resident Evil project that's coming to Netflix. In the vein of like the other CG movies that come before, like Degeneration and Vendetta and what was the other one? we were just talking about Chris. There's three of them.
Damnation.
Payback, I think, was the other one, maybe?
No. It's like Damnation, Degeneration, Vendetta.
Yes. So yeah, so it's the style is the same as those. It's Leon and Claire again, and it's the remake voice actors are voicing them. So the RE2 remake actors. And the trailer has Leon and Claire are at the White House, and zombies attack the White House, and it's Sandy Hap. Everything goes crazy. They protect the president and like deal with the zombies. I wonder if it's gonna be like Degeneration. Because I remember Degeneration, the trailers for that was like, oh man, it's the airport outbreak, like this plane crashed into the airport, and that was like the first like 20 minutes or something, and then it went to like some sort of like crazy umbrella facility.
Yeah, just underground. That's usually what happens.
Yeah, so I wonder if the White House is gonna be like the, like just like the opening of this movie, and it's like gonna go to like some umbrella place or some other
like psych,
back to Raccoon City or something like mm-hmm. some sort of thing.
I mean, most likely, I feel like it's not all about in that White House.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks pretty good. Like, I mean, if you like the like those other CG movies, I mean, this looks like right in that. It's same style looks like. I mean, it looks slightly better as far as like quality wise, but I mean, it looks like right, it slots right into like that series. It looks like so. And this is gonna be a mini series, so it's gonna be one season. I think it's gonna be I think it said like six episodes maybe.
Well, that's fine. See it out. I mean. It's more consistent than like the movies that randomly just appear.
Yeah, and this definitely seems like a better thing than like whatever the hell that like other like the, I think it's gonna be like live action, but
the Wesker daughters,
and stuff. Yeah, this is like probably more of like what Resident Evil fans wants. And this is gonna be I think it said June. July this summer. So it's July we'll get the Resident Evil Infinite Darkness streaming. And then last trailer for the week is that we got a trailer for a Danish movie called Riders of Justice, which stars Mads Mikkelsen, and he is a soldier who gets called. He has to come home from being deployed because his wife gets killed in a train explosion or train accident, but then he finds out from like these like random dudes who show up at his house. They're like, oh, it wasn't an accident. Like these like this gang called the Riders of Justice like attacked the train deliberately and they blew up the train. It's like a terrorist attack. So then Mads Mikkelsen and these guys are kind of like team up to like track down and like kill or take out the guys who caused the train explosion or train attack.
And it's kind of like a comedy a little bit.
Yeah, it looks like it has like kind of like maybe like dark comedy elements to it, along with like crazy like very like gritty action. Like the action looks like very like gritty and like John Wick style, but or something. But then it's like, but then there's like goofy like character stuff with like the other guys, because like Mads Mikkelsen is like a full like soldier, like he's just like full on like action hero mode. But then all the other guys are just like these like goofy like civilian dudes who are like, I work on computers. Like,
yeah, yeah. It's different because it feels like Munich at some points, and then it just has this I don't know, like a heist movie vibe a bit, and then action pack. Like every character kind of seems like a different stereotype or something else.
Yeah, yeah. It's a revenge action movie, but then it has like weird, like comedic, like I don't know. Like it reminds me of I haven't seen the original, but I've heard like it was like this. But then like the Liam Neeson movie, like Cold Pursuit. Where they were selling that as like a full on like this is the next Liam Neeson revenge movie that turned into like more of like a Fargo kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But I don't know, like some of the context of this movie though is more like a revenge, straight up like.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, but I feel like the original like the Cold Pursuit, like the original like Danish movie or what Scandinavian
like this?
Movie, I think it was like this too. Like I think this is like a kind of like a Danish thing where it's just like mixing like revenge
action
revenge,
comedy.
Yeah, revenge thriller, dark comedy sort of thing.
Okay. Could be. We're just not used to Danish action.
Yeah. And I guess this is a director that Mads Mikkelsen has worked with like a bunch. Like this is like the fifth movie he's doing with this guy, Anders Thomas Jensen. So they're like very frequent collaborators. And then a bunch of Danish actors alongside Mads Mikkelsen. So. Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. Like, Mads Mikkelsen looks pretty badass. He's like got a bald head and like a crazy beard, so it's like definitely like a very like.
He looks like a soldier Viking.
Yeah, intimidating Viking soldier Mads Mikkelsen, so that's pretty cool. And this one's going to be in theaters on May 14th, like select theaters, and then it's also going to be on demand on May 21st, so you can check that out when it comes out. And yeah, so that's it for trailers this week, so let's move on to some other stuff. And we found out this week, or I think it was late last week, actually, that Jordan Vogt Roberts, who directed Kong Skull Island, is going to be directing a Gundam movie for Netflix.
Interesting.
So yeah, so a live-action Gundam movie. I don't know if there was like a specific like series, because that's a whole can of worms. Just like what series is it based on, or is it based on anything? It's just gonna be like the general idea of Gundam.
Yeah, I mean, do you bring a classic season in, or do you make a generic Gundam movie where it's like, I have no idea who these characters are, what they're fighting, just show me a Gundam? Because there was like a knockoff Gundam movie that was like, they couldn't get the rights, so like they had modified the CGI. It was live action, like parts of it were humans, you know, and then other parts were just like weird early CGI that I was like, I think this is a Gundam. Like they got the legs right and like the torso, but everything else was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they somewhere around the development, they just couldn't get the rights to it. So let's see how we go. You know, Netflix is doubling down on the anime world.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, no specific series of Gundam that this will be based on. Brian K. Vaughan is writing it though. So you know, legendary comic writer is writing this this American version of Gundam. Jordan Vogt Roberts obviously has experience with like giant things fighting each other with Kong Skull Island, so hopefully you can translate that to like giant robots fighting each other.
Yeah, I can see that. People want to see that.
And apparently this is probably gonna start shooting before he does his Metal Gear Solid movie, which was gonna start Oscar Isaac. Apparently Gundam's gonna shoot first because I guess Metal Gear Solid is still in like production limbo right now or something.
Oh, by the way, so the first live-action Gundam movie was called G-Savior, and I think they secure the rights, but it is not good. It's like, it is 2000s CGI, and it's like a joint production between like it's like Japan and like Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, whoa, boy. So, it has to be better than G-Savior, the movie.
Yeah.
Which, again, they marketed it, like, not fully Gundam.
Just, I mean, just, you know, just follow the formula. Like, just kind of do what Pacific Rim did, but like just with like more like with like more of the Gundam ideas and stuff going on. Like just like if you can at least have like the battles look like Pacific Rim or like be as good as Pacific Rim, then that's like you're on the right track probably.
Yeah. Because basically the other version that they have on Gundam movies, just like they focus more on the human elements, and it's just like no, people came to see a robot movie. Like I don't know, Pacific Rim is like a good template of a good like robot human combo. So people want to see both, like especially if it's going to be a movie, you know, it's like you got to cram a lot of story into that. I would have preferred a TV show, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what we got.
So, speaking of Netflix stuff, we actually got word about two Mike Flanagan products are coming up, both of them based on Christopher Pike novels. So, you know, 90s teen horror icon Christopher Pike, who, like, is it, like Christopher Pike, Arl Stein, like, two of the biggest 90s horror like teen authors.
I read like one or two Christopher Pike books.
I don't think I've. I saw them a lot. I never read a Christopher Pike. I was like totally into like I was on the Arl Stein train. So,
yeah, he kind of wrote like teen horror stuff that was a little too like erotically charged a bit.
Yeah, it was. I think it was definitely much more edgy and like hardcore than Goosebumps. So.
Yeah, I watched one where it's like, I read one where this girl like befriends, like it's like a coming of age story, but it's kind of like Jennifer's Body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's Thirst, but I gotta like find out which one. But essentially, it's like his whole writing style has been like girls always like falling, being seduced to like evil.
Yeah.
In some form, you know.
But yeah, so for Netflix, Mike Flanagan, who you know obviously has directed stuff, he did the Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor for Netflix. He did Dr. Sleep. He did Oculus and a bunch of other great horror movies. So he's doing a Netflix series, a 10-episode horror series for Netflix based on The Midnight Club for Christopher Pike, which is. It's kind of like the premise is like Are You Afraid of the Dark sort of, but it's like it's these five teens who meet at midnight and they tell stories to each other, like horror stories to each other, but then they make a pact that like the first one of them to die is gonna try to contact the other members of the group from beyond the grave.
Okay, so like a crazy like seance group.
Yeah, and I think it's gonna be, it seems like it's gonna be sort of like where it's like there's gonna be like flashbacks to the younger group and then like the older group, like as the older, and then like they're whenever the first one of them dies, like they're in like a hospice group or something, like a hospice thing or something, or like,
wow.
Like or like
they survive late.
Yeah, like it's definitely like one of the like older members of the group is gonna be William B. Davis, who is the cigarette smoking man from X-Files. So yeah, we're talking like a big leap, like big time gap between like what's going on and Heather Langenkamp is also going to be in the show. She's going to be playing like a doctor that like, runs the hospice where like one of the members of this group is possibly. So yeah, and Mike Flanagan is going to executive produce it, and then he's going to direct like three of the episodes for the show. So that's coming to Netflix sometime in the near future here. And then Mike Flanagan is also going to direct a movie for Universal, not a Netflix movie, just like a movie, theatrical movie for Universal based on Christopher Pike's Season of Passage, which is his like adult novel. So this wasn't like one of his like 90s teen. It was in the 90s, but it wasn't like a teen one. It was like for like an adult horror book. Mm. But it's more of like a sci-fi. It's about a mission to Mars that goes bad. Like, and it's like this doctor who's like, she was on like the first mission to Mars, and then like apparently like, there was like another group that went before her, and she's like being haunted by this like group that all died on Mars.
So it's like Ghost of Mars, but...
Kinda, yeah.
More ghostly instead of aliens.
Yeah. It's like the first group that went to Mars all died, now it's like the second group's coming, and this one doctor is particular is like getting like visited, like she's hears like the voices of like this like the group that went before them. So yeah, so that's gonna be a movie for Universal. So if you're Christopher Pike fan, man, you got some stuff coming.
It's rare for the Pike universe.
Yeah. I think Netflix is also doing the like the Fear Street. I mean, they're doing it's like a trilogy of movies. So yeah, like '90s teen horror is gonna be getting a resurgence soon here. And last bit of news for this week is actually going back to Mads Mikkelsen. We learned this week that he's gonna be joining Indiana Jones 5. In an unspecified role, although I'd have to imagine, like, possibly as the villain.
As Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. Yeah. Who else would Mads Mikkelsen play in an Indiana Jones movie except the villain of the movie? Like,
yeah, if you play, like, the sidekick or something, I'd just be a shock, but it's like, no, you have Mads Mikkelsen. You want him either to be, like, the lead, but it doesn't make sense in Indy. He's like a perfect villain for a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It could be
We don't really know the time period. I would assume probably more in like the like 70? Cold War era.
Yeah, 60s still. It was the 50s in Kingdom Skull, right?
Yes, because it's post World War II, Cold War, Soviets, and so it was like 50 something and Crystal Skull, so I was imagining probably like maybe still the 50s, like late 50s, or maybe getting to like 60s on the or 70s.
Russians again.
Yeah, it's got to be Russians again, because that's like the only villains hanging around, unless it's like gonna be like some sort of like the Argentinian like Nazis that like escaped. Like,
it could be, that'd be interesting. It'd just be like Hunters.
Yeah, Hunters with Indiana Jones.
I would watch that. It'd be weird, but it's like I'll watch it. Even though Indiana Jones is not, like, he's not really a Nazi hunter. He's more like, I hate Nazis. But it's like, yeah, so did everyone back then. Nancy Nicholson could just be like, oh, like, you know my father. Like,
Belloc.
Belloc. And it's like, yeah, I'm here to take revenge. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking, maybe it could be tied into... I know, like, they don't want to talk about the franchise where it's, like, new Indiana Jones. But, I mean, Shia LaBeouf's not coming back. So, how are you going to explain, like, where's your kid and your wife, Indy?
Yeah. Yeah, there's like, pretty much no details about what the hell the plot is or, like, what is going on. We do know that James Mangold is directing it. So, we assumed like Steven Spielberg was going to direct it, but like he's just going to be producing it. And so James Mangold, who directed Logan and most recently Ford versus Ferrari, is going to be directing Indiana Jones 5. And it's going to be next July, so July 29th, 2022 is when Indiana Jones 5 is coming out. So hopefully maybe like sometime this year we'll get more info about what the hell's happening in this movie. Production's gonna start this summer, so they're gonna start shooting it this summer, hopefully, and then get it ready for next summer.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, just want to see where this goes. I like more Indiana Jones stuff.
Yeah, I wonder. Since they put like a lot of that weird Star Wars stuff on Disney Plus recently, like, do you think they would ever put like Young Indiana Jones Chronicles on Disney Plus?
I hope so, because I haven't seen that in a while, and I just don't want to like. Wasn't I don't want to buy the VHS tapes.
Wasn't it on Netflix? Like, way, way back in the day?
Maybe. When, like, no one cared for a while?
Yeah, I feel like it was on Netflix. And I put it in my queue, like, oh, I'll watch this one someday, and then it was gone. So I'm just like, all right.
It belongs in a museum.
Yeah. And I remember I got... One of the episodes was, like, attached to, like, the, like, there was the classic like VHS trilogy set, and it was the trilogy, and then you got like a bonus like Young Indiana Jones Chronicles VHS, and there was like a trailer that played before like all of your movie, just like collect the entire epic saga of like the complete adventures of Indiana Jones, like get all the Young Indiana Jones Chronicle things as like separate VHS movies. But yeah, if Ewoks can show up on Disney Plus, like you gotta imagine like at some point like that Young Indiana Jones Chronicles is gonna show up on there. Start a hashtag that always works.
Bring back the indie cuts.
Yeah. So that's it for news this week. So I jump into show and tell. And Chris, did you see anything in the last week or so here?
Yeah, I caught up on all Invincible, at least 5 episodes so far.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So caught up on that.
Over halfway, I think it's gonna be 8 episodes. So like it's episode 6. Is it episode 5 or 6 this coming weekend?
Is it a weekend show or is it a Friday show?
Well, yeah. If you're hearing this, like the new episode is up. I don't know. I can't remember what episode it was because they put 3. It must be 6 because they put 3, and it's been like 2 weeks since the premiere. So, it's been good. Like the most recent episode. As of us seeing, like, cause we're not able to see the new episode yet, but like the one last week where it's like Invincible was like helping Titan, like the rock guy, try to like take down like crazy Jeffrey Donovan, evil Iron Man.
That's Jeffrey Donovan.
Yeah, he's the voice of Machine Head.
The voice of like Skrillex.
Yes. Yeah. Evil dubstep Daft Punk gangster guy. Like. And yeah, the fight at the end of that episode was just like even on a show as brutal as Invincible, that was like particularly brutal.
Yeah, I mean that's like basically a Sinister Six team up.
Yeah. And what was the one guy like War? Was it Warwolf or Battle Beast or whatever the hell his name was?
I don't know.
What a Battle Beast, like
some man, galactic monster.
Yeah, man, that dude is like insane.
Yeah, and it's like he fights for just like the thrill. He's like Kraven the Hunter, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he fights for just like killing strong people.
Yeah.
So I gotta like, it gets me interested into watching more of the series, and I definitely interested in like reading the comics at some point to see the difference. Mm-hmm. But is it pretty accurate? Like.
Oh, you never read Invincible?
I read select things. So I don't know if it's like aligns well with the comics.
I'm gonna have to read like because I have the first trade, but that's all I have is like for like in my collection. Mm-hmm. But I think that first trade is kind of like the like close to what this first season is gonna be for the arc. So yeah, I might have to read that again just to kind of see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm definitely like an Invincible late bloomer since this is like super new to me. So I was like, okay, I know like highlights, but I don't know like the story beats where it's matching up.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was like right from the beginning or if like it was later. But I definitely remember that, like it must have been later because I think it was like kind of like a reveal like oh this is also this is happening, but like. Like Invincible has like a little brother.
Yeah, yeah, I know that part. Where yeah, it's like surprise kid.
Yeah. And then they became like kind of like a like Batman and Robin sort of thing a little bit. We definitely haven't gotten to like the big twist of the first arc yet, which I'm assuming that's gonna be like the season finale or something. Is like maybe get to that point. So.
Yeah.
Without spoiling anything.
If you just never heard of Invincible, but as soon as Invincible happened, like people are just like spoiling left and right, like certain arcs.
Yeah.
So really be careful out there.
But yeah, it's great. It's great to watch. Like you can watch Falcon and Winter Soldier and Invincible for like your Friday nights, which is awesome. So, yeah, anything else besides Invincible, Chris?
I watched the first episode of the new My Ducks Game Changer TV show.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about you, but the show is confusing with the message. Because have you seen the first My Ducks or any of the movies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw one and two, like, just endlessly. So,
okay.
When I was a kid, so.
So, like, what is the message of Mighty Ducks? Like, what's the statement they always keep saying? At least the first movie I understood it was the, that, like, anyone could play hockey, or, like, these are underdogs, like, don't count out the underdogs.
Yeah.
And then the second one was just like, this is America's best.
America is the underdog against the world.
Like, the world. The third one was, these are the under freshmen in this weird high school. So, in the TV show, it's about like the reject underdogs, and it's like, honestly, they should have not played hockey. Like, because the Ducks have become like a brand name, and there are, I don't know if they didn't explain how this works, because it's like, it's like, are they sponsored by like the real Mighty Ducks in Anaheim, or just like, because there's no Minnesota Mighty Ducks, but for some reason.
If I recall from like, I think it was like, was it two or three? I think they mentioned like in like the universe of the Mighty Ducks, like the NHL team like still took their name from the Minnesota Ducks.
I see.
Because they won like they won the fake Olympics in two. So
they became a real team that way. All right.
Yeah.
So I mean, at this point, it's supposed to be like way later. It's something where like generations went by, and the Mighty Ducks have now become like gigantic assholes, and they're cranking out like just jocks or just like
they're basically like the Hawks from the first movie.
Oh, they're way worse than the Hawks. Like the Hawks, they're like, oh, I want my kid to do well, but like they seem like they're still friendly and stuff. Just when they play games and competitive, that's natural, right?
Yeah.
But the show makes fun of the concept of like helicopter parents who are taking their kids in middle school and like trying to make sure that, you know, college hockey, their life is all planned out and perfect and, you know, 100% mm-hmm. schedule, and that hockey is now like a way to advance in life more than enjoy it. So they take like the kids league or like this 13 to 14 or like 12 to 14 league, like it just like they are supposed to be very aggressive, because it's like, yeah, you're like gonna be teens, so the rules are like you're gonna need to be a certain shape and kind of like high, like competition height. So I play peewee hockey, so I'm like my parents and folks, like I get like the whole, you know, mentality, but I mean they're basically are playing almost like an NHL style, like gear, equipment, like it's not like just a bunch of scrappy teens. Like it's crazy to think that like, oh no, it's years now. Hockey has taken over like Minnesota in like a giant wave, and it's like there's like at least five or four, it's supposed to be like four districts that have their own hockey teams, four or five districts or something. I don't understand how this league works, but basically like all the kid, like two of the people from the original, like one, actually, so it's about like this one kid who gets kicked off the Ducks team because like they're moving up in rank. So the next category, like you all can't play. And then they're trying to cut like the weaker people, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And this one kid's not up to par yet because he just is like a little chubby. And he's also like not as big as the other players. He's not as skillful. So he gets cut. But the guy, even the coach is like a dick, but he's like, he's got a message where it's like, you're not going to like make it. Like, it's going to get aggressive. Like, he kind of warns the kid in a dickish manner, but the mom's like, no, you don't tell my kid that. Like, he can do anything he wants, but it's like, there's got to be within reason, like, lady. Like, he's as much as he's like is an asshole, his message still makes sense, where like, it's not just like a peewee league anymore. You advance from the peewee to the like teen league. And you know, if you fail tryouts and it's like you just can't make up a new team and just like, yeah, we could play too, but it's like you're gonna play with a handicap. So the first episode off the bat as a like an adult, now I'm like, okay, it's not just like everyone should be fair. It's like, there's also rules, you know, it's like a weight class difference.
Yeah.
And it's like, some of the people that they get, it's just like, oh, you're not ready. Like, just based on, like, some people, like, a good amount of people that they build as a new Mighty Ducks team are just, like, on par. Like, they've never been friends before. Like, this is the first time they're working together. Like, almost all of them never played hockey before. And it's not like, okay, in the first movie, they didn't play hockey, but at least, like, most of them were friends.
Or, well, like... they were in the first movie, they were playing hockey. They just sucked. They were the worst team in the league.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, even then, they got other people, and then they were friends with other people. Like, they recruited friends they knew.
Yeah.
Right? In this TV show, like, two characters are just friends, and the rest are just strangers, or they're just like, hey, I get, like, your heart, like, because it's like, I want to join, like, you guys, even if I don't win or not. The message also isn't to win or, like, they don't care if they win.
Yeah.
Like, they know they're going to lose, but it's like, they play with heart. But it's like, yeah, but you're playing against, like, these kids that are just, like, all about winning. You can't just, like, change their mind. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so ingrained in our society that, you know, it's like, no one wants to be, like, who's the worst, like, baseball team? You know what I mean? Like, no one gives a shit if they had heart. It's just like, oh, no, this team is, like, notoriously terrible. So they're just making a notoriously terrible team. Like, they don't even call themselves the Ducks. They call themselves, like, the like, don't-doers or something. Like, it's something dumb. It's supposed to prove that they don't give a shit about, like, the rules. But then it's like, if I were, like, a league member, I'd be like, no, because this team is, like, obviously not ready. Like, the season just started. So it's like, through, like, a string of events, they kind of pull the strings enough to pull, like, to get in the league when the league starts, to do, like, a open day ceremony to be like, no, we're, like, this team that can't, like, play correctly, like, is in the league, like, you have to acknowledge us. And they're like, okay, like, it's your money, like, this isn't free, you know, they'll take your money, you know, just because you register, you pay the fees, they'll beat the shit out of you, like, the team will beat you, just be like, well, you already paid the, you know what I mean, like, it's a business. It's like, if you want to come pay to lose, like, that's fine. Like, don't get all the heart you want. Just keep paying the fines or keep paying the installment plans.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I was, like, kind of confused about. I was like, at least, like, Goran Bombay, his heart was, like, in it. Like, he did it for, like, a, you know, DUI reasons. And then also he's in it, but he is just like a cameo in the first episode, really. And it's funny because if you watch the first three movies and then you watch this, his life spiraled out of control. They don't explain why yet, but it's just like, it's such a shock to see him such like a hobo now.
Yeah, like, wasn't he back to being a lawyer in three?
Yeah. He lawyered his way up into getting his, like, old teammate, his old team, like, into the school from, like, technicalities. Like, he was going to sue the school because, like, there's a charter where if you won that scholarship, you get, like, the perks or something. It was something dumb at the end where it's like he lured them.
Yeah.
And the school had no time to contest it because I guess it was bad publicity. Also, he got one of the Bash Brothers in from out of technicality or something. Like, remember, yeah, like, the last minute addition where it's like half the school season's over and now this kid transferred?
Yeah, like, Portman, like, never took, he never, like, like, he still had his scholarship, so, like, he didn't show up, and then, like, but his scholarship was still valid or something for some reason.
Something where it's, like, half a semester. It's, like, that's it. Like, your slot is taken by someone else in this prep school. But, oh, the opening sequence let me tell you something else. I was like, that sounds weird. In the beginning of this My Duck Show, there's a point where this mom character, played by Lauren Graham, rants, like, she does this, like, rant when her son gets kicked, that she's, like, saying that, like, hey, you know, this should be fun, this shouldn't be all serious, you're making these kids into robots, blah blah blah, and she screams, like, most of these people have zero chance to go professional. Like, she says that. I'm like, even if that's true, like, you shouldn't say that. Like, you're insulting these kids. It's like, no matter how much they push themselves, they'll never be professional. And they're just like, oh my god, like, this is the hero of the story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, she says that, and the show kind of, like, does, like, oh, let's make her, like, likable. But it's like, no, she said that in the opening part of the show. Like, I hate her already. But she tries her best. Like, she's supposed to be like, yeah, I'm learning. Like, I'm learning what it's like to be, like, a hockey mom. Because she's not really into it, but she's doing it for her son. And then, for some reason, like, they pick her as the coach. Even though she's like, oh, I never had experience before. It's just like, no, it doesn't matter if you experience. It's all about heart. But I'm like, no. At least they set up that, like, you know, someone had the experience. So, I'm kind of like a purist, I guess. In my ducks, so... I'll still watch it, but I'll see if I want to watch it because I enjoy it or I hate watch it. But the crazy part about the Mighty Ducks, it's not like they are like super 90s, like white kids and athletic and mean and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like a diverse group. It is like the Mighty Ducks are just like what the Mighty Ducks would be, but their attitudes are different because it's like multicultural. There's girls playing on their team. Like, well, one of the bullies is an Asian girl. So I was like, what is happening in this show?
That was like the first movie. Like, that was the whole thing. Like when they got like Adam Banks, like he's like, he was like from like, cause the district the Hawks came from was like the rich district.
Yeah.
And so, but then like they restructured the lines that he was a duck actually. And then that's why they always called him like cake eater too, because he's like, because he's from the rich side of town where the Hawks were. Because they need like the law firm to like sponsor them.
Yep.
To get, be able to buy equipment in the first movie.
So you remember that in this one they didn't even mention like how these kids can play hockey and stuff and who's paying for this equipment. They're just kind of like,
yeah,
figure out. They were like they all go to the same school. Most of the people that they all like work together like to like recruit. That they work, they all go to this weird middle school, high school, because it's a mixed crowd of kids. It's like you know, TV fantasy where, like, blatantly in the back are just high school kids, and then the front are just like all the middle school kids. But for some reason, like, the actors, I mean, they're young, so it just looks really bizarre when you basically have like kids who are like blatantly like 16, 17 bullying like a 13-year-old. I'm like, what is this? So that, I guess it's that movie magic that I'm just like not seeing, because I'm just like, at least Mighty Ducks, the first two movies, everyone was like age appropriate or looked the part, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then you get to like this show and I'm just like bitching about the small details. But I don't know. Gordon Bombay, I just want to watch more Gordon Bombay. Like he is just like he's like an Always Sunny in Philadelphia character now. Like he's eating cake that like is left behind because he now owns like an ice rink.
Yeah.
And he's eating it. It's funny because you see him one shot, he's eating the cake at the beginning when he's like kind of being introduced. And then later on, he's still eating another, he can't tell if it's like the same cake or another cake, but he's eating like leftover kids party food.
Yeah,
because he's such a tight budget, so he's just like eating this cake throughout the episode. I'm like, my God, Gordon, you used to be a lawyer. What happened to you?
Yeah,
save your money.
I guess a bunch of the ducks are gonna come back too at some point.
I did see a photo of that.
Where it's like a film. So anything else, Chris?
That's about it. You know. I'll probably watch another episode of Mighty Ducks and rant about that next time.
Well, I guess I'll keep it TV for my first thing. I saw the first episode of The Nevers on HBO, which is the new Joss Whedon show. Although they're very downplaying the Joss Whedon part of it now, just because of everything that's happening with him. But he created the show. I think he directed the first episode, wrote the first episode, but all the promotional stuff is like very, very downplaying. Like it's like a Joss Whedon show. I think he like there's like a new showrunner. Like he was supposed to be the showrunner, but then I guess there's like a new showrunner, and there's a whole like there's a whole, all the crazy Justice League stuff that's happening that was happening like last year or two. So yeah, it definitely is a Joss Whedon show. It's just they're downplaying it as far as like promotional stuff, but It's set in, I believe it's like 1896 or something, like Victorian era London. There's a a crazy event happens, and like basically a bunch of people get like special, like basically get like X-Men style powers. It's very like it's like Victorian era X-Men, or it's like X-Men crossed with like Penny Dreadful or something. Like it's sort of like that. Where, and like everyone has a power is called they're touched, because they got touched by whatever this power was. They gave the powers.
Okay.
And you basically you kind of have like a like sort of like like a Xavier School for Gifted Youth thing, because there's like there's an orphanage is like kind of like set up is like protecting like a bunch of the touched kids and touched people, and then there's like kind of like the two main characters, like these two women who are like kind of like going out and like they find more touched people to like bring them back to the school, like to the orphanage, and they like protect them. So that you have like one of the characters is Amalia True, who's like who's played by like Laura Donnelly, and she definitely has trying to like make her like the Eva Green of this show. Like she looks like Eva Green, and she's like the fighter. Like she's like a very like skilled fighter, and then she also has like this like her powers, like she can like see, like she gets like glimpses of the future.
Right.
But it's not like she see the future, like know what the hell is gonna happen. She like just gets like these like very brief glimpses, like a couple like minutes into the future, so she has like kind of like an idea of what's gonna happen, but not really. And then the other main character is Penance Adair, and she is like her power is that she is like she can see like electrical patterns, so she's like a very like skilled inventor. And so she like makes all these like steampunk style inventions. Like she makes like Victorian like style like flashbangs and like a car and stuff. So there's a lot of like steampunk stuff going on too.
And so it's like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen style.
Yeah, some of that going on. Definitely X-Men, because it's like this like persecuted group of people with powers. Penny Dreadful, just because it's like the time period and kind of like some of the character stuff going on. So it's a mix of a bunch of stuff, and there's definitely a lot of stuff happening, as far, like set up in the first episode too, like a lot of like different plots happening. There's like the whole like just the general just like touched like the touched like being hunted down in like this orphanage, and then there's like there's some sort of like club that's being run by this lord aristocrat guy who is like possibly tied into things. And then there's like Pip Torrens, aka Hare Star from Preacher, is like this like British noble guy who like wants to like he's like the main like villain against the touch. He's like, we need to destroy the touch because it's like they're gonna replace humans, and we're already at war with them.
Oh, it becomes like an evil Magneto.
Not even Magneto, because he doesn't have powers. He's just like he's more like a Senator Kelly or something.
I
like,
see.
We need to like stop them or like control them, because they're gonna rise up and just take us out. And there's also like a touch serial killer called Milady, who is running around, and she's like insane and like is like leading this like group of like evil touched people, and like is like killing a bunch of people around London, and so that's a whole thing. Nick Frost is on the show. He's like he's the beggar king. He's like this like he's like the crime boss that's running around London, and kind of has a deal with like the orphanage folks to like protect them. And there's also like a detective who's like this like very like hard boiled like British like London detective who's like going around trying to like solve like these like serial killer murders. So there's a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, it's really crammed in there.
Yeah, the first episode was just like, wow, there's a lot of characters, a lot of stuff happening. But it seems interesting. It seems cool. There's some cool power, like the powers are cool. As far as like showing them off Definitely some fun fights where like Amalia True is like fighting people and like using like Victorian martial arts on people, which they don't really explain like if like she must have just like I guess you just have to assume like she just was like training since she got her powers, but like it doesn't seem like that's a part of her powers that she also gets like martial arts powers because of this.
Well, is it like Sherlock Holmes style karate?
Yeah, it's kind of. It's like, yeah, it's like
Savant, whatever that.
There's kind of some like Kingsman stuff going on too, because they like they have like they fight with umbrellas a lot of times. They have special umbrellas that have like brass knuckles and like shockers in them and stuff. So it's like you get some like Kingsman like umbrella fighting if you're into that. But yeah, I think I'll definitely keep watching. It seems like an interesting show. It's kind of like a mashup of a bunch of stuff, but. Yeah, I mean, if you're into, like, I think if you're into, like, Penny Dreadful or something, you probably definitely were checking out. Or if you like Joss Whedon stuff. And then, actually, kind of, like, in the same time period as the saying of numbers, I also saw News of the World, which was...
Tom Hanks?
Yeah, Tom Hanks. It came out, I believe it was, like, Christmas last year in whatever theaters were open, or... If you were outside the U.S., it was on Netflix, apparently. But not in the U.S., it was in theaters and, like, I think premium video on demand or whatever. But, Tom Hanks Western, directed by Paul Greengrass. So it's a Captain Phillips reunion, because those two teamed up for that movie a couple years ago. And, 1870 is when this one is set. Tom Hanks is basically this guy... Captain Kidd, who travels around and reads the news to towns. So, like, he'll show up a town and be like, if you pay, like, he kind of like has a show where, like, you pay 10 cents and he'll, like, read, like, newspapers from, like, different cities and, like, different countries and kind of just, like, bring people, like different things that are happening outside their, like, city or whatever. But then he kind of, like, on his way to, like, one of his. Like between towns, like he finds like this overturned wagon, and then there's like a this young girl who's like named Joanna, who's like kidnapped by Native Americans when she was like very young, and basically grew up as like one of them. But then like was like she got found by like the Union Army and was like being transported back to like her relatives who like live in like it's like 500 miles away from where they were going, and. So basically, Tom Hanks like brings her to like the next town, but then like the Union soldiers are like, "Well, our Bureau of Indian Affairs guy is not going to be here for like 3 months, so it's either like leave her here for 3 months or you can take her yourself." And so he is, like Tom Hanks decides to take her himself.
Oh, and, that's what the News of the World is like. This little girl.
Well, and also Tom Hanks like reading news to people.
I'm a reading man.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's a solid Western. It doesn't do anything surprising. Like you could probably predict what is going to happen. it doesn't stray far from like what you'd expect. Tom Hanks is like, I don't know how to deal with a kid. I don't want a kid. But then you know by the end of it, like surprise, like he thinks of her as a daughter. Like so, it's like. Or, like, it's the family he never had, like. So, yeah, kind of predictable, but, like, still a lot of style stuff. Like, Tom Hanks is, you know, great as always. And there's, like, Helena Zengel, who's, like, I think this is, like, her debut movie. She's really good as, like, Joanna. And there's, you know, there's some fun, there's, like, a shootout sequence that's pretty cool. And, like, they get caught in like a dust storm. So there's a lot of Western like danger stuff that happens along the way. So,
I mean, I think it's more like that Western because it's not like a full on cowboy. It's just more like a guy in the West, or yeah. Like two people versus like just how shitty the West is.
Yeah, and yeah, it's a lot of a lot of vignettes like episode. It's very episodic. It's just like they like roll into a new town. And it's just like, oh, what's going on now? Like,
there's yeah, like I feel like this is one of those things where. Years from now, News of the World would be like a TV show.
Maybe
it's like structured that way, from what I hear, and like as you're saying it, where it's like it's not. It's like it's more about the journey than the actual destination.
Yeah,
because it seems like it's these two unlikely pair taking on surviving the West, even though one guy is just like reading the newspaper. You know, the girl's just there for the ride.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like so. It's like. They roll into one town and there's like these like three ex-Confederate bandit guys who like want to like buy Joanna, and then Tom Hanks is like, no way. And then that kind of leads So then they like kind of chase them out of town that leads to like the shootout. And then they kind of like roll into another town, and it's like this town, like it's like this like buffalo hunter businessman has taken over the town basically, and is like they control the roads, and then it's like so they're kind of like trapped there for a little bit, and they have to figure out a way like to like get out of there. So yeah, but it's definitely it's very solid. Like it's not bad by by any means, but it doesn't do anything like it doesn't like revolutionize the Western genre. Like if you're looking for like a very solid Western, check out News of the World.
I'm surprised no one made like the Toy Story analogy with like this, because yeah. Tom Hanks hasn't really been in Westerns, so and this isn't a typical cowboy Western.
No. But yeah, it's definitely a dad movie, like a Tom Hanks dad movie. Like this and Greyhound last year were like peak Tom Hanks dad movie.
Oh yeah, like Greyhound, but Greyhound is like suspiciously like a religious movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that until I started watching it. Then I looked at it. And it's like, oh, the guy who wrote this was like a Catholic or a Christian, like you know, not hardcore devout, but weirdly like had a message. But it News of the World was just marketed weird because I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, it's also based on a book, so
yeah I think like looked at the box office records, this didn't blow away like you know in theaters.
And well,
it was barely in theaters.
Well, I mean, what theaters were open last year, last Christmas? Like,
it cost $38 million and it only made $12 million. So I'm like, how did it get that? Because well, Apple Records.
I don't. I mean, it was on premium video on demand, so like we don't really know what those numbers are. So it could have made a bunch of money. I think it was on like top of like iTunes and Amazon charts for months on end. So I'm sure it probably made. I don't know if it made like its money. I'm sure it probably broke even. I don't know if like how much it like broke even past that, but I mean it probably made a bunch of money on demand, especially if it was like premium video on demand. It was like $20 to rent it or whatever. Like, and it was like top of those charts doing that every week or every month. Like, it probably did pretty well. But yeah, I would say definitely, if you're a fan of Tom Hanks, if you want to see like a solid dad movie Western, definitely check it out. And that's all I saw this week, so we can wrap things up. Definitely keep it on the site. We're going to have a bunch of big stuff coming up soon. We're going to be doing our monthly commentary, which this month is Blood Fist, the Don the Dragon Wilson classic. And so that's coming up soon. Our video game feature, Gamebox 2.0, is going to be up for our monthly gaming rundown. We're going to have the Kick-Ass Awards are back because the Oscars are coming up next weekend. So the Kick-Ass Awards will be up before the Oscars happen next week. And yeah, all the regular stuff is up there as well. So have a site, check all the stuff out. And yeah, so for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.